Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're coming to you from the
secret headquarters.
The secret headquarters of NoCo Cinema, away from the main recording
dome.
Yeah. We're using the mobile disaster unit here.
Absolutely.
To just hang out and chat a little bit.
We are still in the confines of Cook County, though, so.
Yeah. So we're on brand,
and that's the most important thing.
That's truly the most important thing. Thank you to everybody who's been listening to the Adirondack Film Festival interviews. It was really a lot of fun to do. I had a great time at the festival, as you could probably tell from those interviews. A lot of really fun stuff. Both part one and part two are up for some of those interviews. You can listen to a lot of really great filmmakers talk about their craft, all their shorts, features, what have you. Connor and I want to reconvene and talk a little bit about, as we get to the end of October, this sort of 31 days of horror that we were trying to accomplish. And Connor, you've done a really good job. You've done a really good job for yourself.
I'm still so shy, though. I'm about 8 films shy. It's hard. It's really hard to have to watch, for me in particular. I don't know, it's just kind of hard to watch a horror movie every day.
I mean,
and I would do days where I would double feature it, and I've actually been noticing some physiological effects that this has been having on me.
Really?
I have had increased nightmares, more frequent nightmares. Very strangely, I've been watching a lot of older horror movies in the latter half of the month, and I noticed that it's been really taking me back to the nightmares that I've been having are very reminiscent of the kinds of nightmares that I would have when I was sick as a child.
Okay.
And so it's been really strange to kind of revisit those. And I've also noticed that I have not been as sleeping as well.
So you've had trouble sleeping. You know, you're having these like really vivid sort of
old nightmares.
Like, what do you remember any of them?
Yeah, absolutely. The one that I keep having is very strange, and it's one where it feels like a movie. I mean, they're very vivid, you know, you understand how that goes.
Sure.
And the way that it always starts out is I'm in a particular location, usually like a bayou, something that's near water. And sometimes I'm in a bayou, sometimes I'm next to a lake and going into a trailer or going into a house. But once I get inside this, I always end up walking inside of a thing, and I get the feeling that something is chasing me, is following me, you know?
Yeah.
And every time I get inside this place, it opens up into this like new world, practically. It's this old mansion full of dark wood, and it's all very gothic. It's very poorly lit. None of the corridors make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
All of the doors are locked. And I go through a door and I'm just stuck in the middle of this like labyrinthine mansion. And there is a little girl that is wearing a dress, and she has this black puke surrounding her that's like streaming out of her face. And she doesn't move, but it's something like everywhere I go, she is there in front of me. Like, I will turn down a corridor and she'll be there. She never, like, leaves my line of sight once I'm inside this, like, hellscape.
That's straight up terrifying.
Yeah. And so I wake up, and then that's when I crack the door open a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but I've been having it relatively frequently, like, once a couple times a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So after having watched this many horror films, you know, would you say that it seems to be almost bad for your health in a way?
I'm not going to watch a horror movie after this month for a while.
Yeah.
That's for sure. There is just something about, you know, putting yourself in that situation. I think that it's good to feel it's vulnerable. You know, you're putting yourself in a situation where you are willingly making yourself vulnerable, which is in line with a kind of a resolution that I wanted to make for myself this year. Was I wanted to be, you know, watching cinema and in life, you know, be more comfortable with being vulnerable to people and and these sorts of experiences, you know, not shying away from emotional experiences, you know what I mean?
No, I totally get what you're saying. Let's talk about some of the films that you watched, and maybe we can get to the bottom of what's really disturbing you, because this, I mean, that's fascinating.
Sure.
It's legitimately fascinating that this is having such an effect. So let's go some of the highlights, some of the ones that you really were like, yeah, I'm glad I took the time to watch this.
So I rewatched Mom and Dad, which was a movie that you showed me.
Nick Cage,
with Nicolas Cage. Yep. We watched it when we took a little vacation last year around this time, actually.
Oh, was that the first time you had seen Mom and Dad?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it yet. North? Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
Well, it was a good place to watch it too.
And so I rewatched it, and it's great. It's definitely got like a Night of the Living Dead kind of vibe, but it meets, you know, like something inexplicable starts happening, which sort of changes for the worse, changes people, and it's funny, and it's very, it runs its premise very thin, but not to the point where it's tedious. It's a very compelling watch throughout the entire movie.
I feel like it explores every facet of what they're trying to do.
Without overstaying its welcome, which is nice.
It's pretty short. I'm guessing, what, about an hour and a half?
And it's always, it's like a good like punk set or something, you know? It's like, it makes you feel like you want more at the end of it, which is really good for a movie that's so singular of purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I very much, that was, I think that was even, you know, I watched it on Hulu first because it just happened to be on Hulu. I had heard about it. I'm a big fan of Nick Cage, big fan of Selma Blair. So I'd heard about it, watched on Hulu, loved it, and then went and picked it up I got it secondhand too. I was like, I can't believe that someone would buy this and like go out of their way to buy this and then not keep it. You know, it's a very specific movie to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like, but it's a good buy.
Yeah, it's a great buy. What else?
So I'm kind of just running down my list here. I noticed that I have been watching an inordinate amount of what some might call pagan horror. Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen a lot of people describe pagan horror with very stringent terms. Some people have gone so far as to say that the only pagan horror that's ever been made is The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man. So, but I consider it relatively pagan horror. The movies that I would consider pagan horror, I watched The Endless, which is an extremely interesting movie. It's not strictly horror, but it is horrifying. And I know we were talking about this before, the term strictly horror is really annoying, but here we go again.
True.
Done by two people. It stars the people who directed it. It stars the people that were the cinematographers. It stars the people that were the editors of the movie. Mm. So it's a really, both behind the scenes and in front of it, it's a very arresting, you know, and a very arresting story. Mm-hmm. What else have I been watching? I watched Apostle with Dan Stevens.
Yeah, I liked Apostle.
Me too.
You know who directed that?
No, who?
The guy behind The Raid.
Really?
Yeah.
What's his name?
It is. I know he's got a similar name to the guy who directed Rogue One and Monsters.
Gareth Evans.
Yeah, Gareth Evans.
That's it. It is Gareth Evans.
Gareth Evans.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was directed by him. Wow. I thought it was a very successful sort of pagan horror thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
horror,
I've noticed that some people have a thing with Dan Stevens where they don't love him. It's kind of there's like a polarizing aspect about Dan Stevens for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just get actors like that.
Yeah.
I personally think I don't love everything that he's in, but usually when I see him in something, I'm excited that he's there.
Well, he's from what? Downton Abbey. He was in the excellent Legion TV show.
But he was also the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. Have you seen that picture of him in the mocap costume where it's like all fluffed up with pillows? And
he's in Colossal.
Really? Yeah. Oh, he's the boyfriend.
He's the boyfriend. The boyfriend in Colossal. Yeah. So he's getting that. I think generally speaking, he's very good. And
I think he's great.
He's got a really interesting track record with horror because he's also in The Guest.
Is he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's in The Guest.
Oh.
So he seems to like the genre. He likes to do a genre picture here and there.
And he really carries the movie. I mean, there are great performances all around, but he, you know, as the centerpiece of the film, I think he does a great job.
Yeah.
And the CGI is done quite well, I think.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got here. I've watched Hereditary.
And I mean, yeah.
I have to. This is only the second time that I've seen it. And my reaction to Hereditary the first time that I saw it was very much the reaction that I had when I watched Requiem for a Dream for the first time.
Yeah.
And it fucked me up in no uncertain terms. It just fucking destroyed me. And it's the familial part in the first hour or so that really does it to me. The girl, you know, girl in the family is, I'm just getting chills even thinking about what happened, and it makes me want to cry.
Yeah, know? It's a movie that definitely deals in grief.
But the thing I want to say about Hereditary is I do think that it is the scariest movie that I have ever seen in my life. It is the movie that has physically frightened me the most. And I know that I said, you know, I've been having a lot of nightmares lately, sleeping with the door open. That's not strictly true for every one that I've seen, but I did turn the hallway light on after watching Hereditary.
Yeah.
Me and my roommate watched it, and we were nervously chuckling and trying to bring some levity to the situation after that ending. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it gets very real. I think upon subsequent viewings, I've found that obviously a lot of the focus goes to Toni Collette, who gives an amazing performance. She's incredible in it. But you know, I didn't even realize that the dad is Gabriel Byrne
from The Usual Suspects.
Yeah. And I totally didn't even get that on first pass because I was just so focused on Tony. And he was really good at just kind of playing the antithesis of it as being like much more
the simmering anger that, the calm that eventually breaks.
Yeah. And it's just so weird because everybody's giving like an 110 performance in that. Even the son, the fucking kid from the Naked Brothers Band.
What?
Yeah. That's. I can't remember if that's Nat or Alex Wolf, but it's one of the Wolf brothers. Yeah.
I think, you're right.
Yeah, that's him.
It's Alex Wolf, I think.
Yeah. He's great in it.
Yeah, he is.
Does a very good job. No, it's an incredibly horrifying film. I always feel bad because in the marketing, they talk about it, how it's the same problem that The Exorcist had, where everybody describes it as the scariest movie of all time. This is like, in the case of Hereditary, it's the scariest movie since The Exorcist. So your expectations are just so remarkably high that I know a lot of people went into that movie and walked out. They're just like, that wasn't even scary. I'm just like, well, what I feel like a lot of people don't open themselves up. They don't make themselves vulnerable. I really liked what you said about like, to really enjoy a horror movie, you have to make yourself vulnerable.
Right. And it's something that you've talked about before, which is kind of a cinema sin, if you will, is getting ahead of the plot.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't try to think about, don't think too hard about what's going to happen next. Just kind of be in the moment with the characters and try to experience what they're experiencing.
You ever try to show a movie to your family members or something and they're just like, oh, this is going to happen. And they're right. And it's like, fuck you. Just watch the movie. Yeah. Just have a moment with me, all right?
Yeah, no, all the time. Or I show them a movie that I really, really love, and they're like, I don't get it. And I'm just like, I mean.
Thanks for trying.
Yeah. Thanks for trying. That's all you can really say to them. So Hereditary is the scariest movie you've ever seen.
It's
the scariest movie you've watched this month.
It's the scariest movie that I've watched this month. I know that it did get, you know, billed as the scariest movie of all time, but really for me, what drove me to it was the fact that Colin Stetson worked on it.
Oh yeah, for the soundtrack,
the avant-garde saxophonist,
yeah,
Colin Stetson. And it's great. The score is
amazing,
really
score.
Really good. It just interfaces so well with what's on screen.
Do you feel that? I mean, Ari Aster, a lot of the A24 crew,
sure,
like of these people that A24 is bankrolling. people are kind of like, obviously with any piece of art, there's backlash. There's some people that really, really believe, people that we know that actively like mock Ari Aster and really think that he's like a hack and really think that he has no talent whatsoever.
Yeah, I've seen, why is there such a
I was just going to say, why do you think, why is there such like an intense backlash? Is it because of the praise? Like for any filmmaker that gets praised, there has to be some sort of like, it's like Newton's law. There has to be the opposing force of people being like, actually, no, fuck you.
Right.
What your taste is terrible.
Well, I think it's almost an outrage that's like the product of just this regurgitated disdain for the normie or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's this, it's A24 has been killing it. And most of the movies that they put out, in my opinion, are good. At the very least, they're worth watching.
Yeah.
One time. But with that, you have the wave of people who watch A24, and it's, you know, it takes, I guess it takes a little bit of spotlight away from other independent, you know, film houses, and they're just kind of the king of independent cinema right now.
Yeah, they've definitely built a cult of personality.
And with that, you will get your detractors, and Ari Aster is, I mean, you could give it to Robert Eggers, I guess, but, I mean, within a year, Ari Aster has come out with two really unique, well executed, in my opinion, horror films, and he's getting a lot of very, in my opinion, due praise.
Yeah,
for this. So you're going to get the detractors that come in and say, "Oh, well, actually, he's a fucking hack. You know, he just did the same. He just made the same movie, except one's at night in a haunted house, and one is in the daytime in a cult."
Yeah, even though I would be like, these are pretty far from the same movie in the sense that they're both dealing with very different things.
Right, and you can say that, you know, I mean, what he's doing on paper isn't strictly original. I mean, you know what I mean? It's...
Well, there's nothing new under the sun, as they say.
Right, but it's the execution of the tropes that he's working within.
Yeah.
That make Absolutely. It such a interesting and affecting watch.
Yeah, people, to me it just seems that obviously A24 represents a sort of New York cool and like kind of indie film cool that a right. lot of people have adopted for themselves. Like when I went to that screening of The Lighthouse, which we'll talk about here in just a second, there were like at least six people wearing like A24 hats or t-shirts,
right?
And I think there's a certain certain idea that in order to be like really a cinephile or something, you must also be somewhat anti-establishment.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. I think it might be a little bit misguided when it's a industry that where art and commerce literally have to coexist in order right. for anything to work. Sorry that, you know, it's, to me, it comes off as a little bit of people who want to be filmmakers who are jealous that there's a company that are bankrolling people that they might feel, they might not like their movies, but they have no choice but to like see them rise in the independent cinema world because they're being bankrolled.
Sure. And that's your prerogative. If that's how it affects you, then that is, you know, that's just part of life, I guess.
I would just say like if you're really hating on A24, maybe like examine why and also remind yourself that this is literally just a movie.
Right.
You don't have to like it, but there's a difference between not liking something and not finding it to be to your taste and then making it your mission to like right. spout as much vitriol as humanly possible about it. It's like, I get it. You don't have to like Midsommar. You don't have to think that Hereditary was scary.
Right. But you don't have to also have to call an emergent voice in the medium that we all love a hack.
Yeah.
But because that's when you go from being having a valid point and a valid coming from a actual, you know, defensible stance of criticism to gatekeeping, which happens totally. A lot with horror is you get the gatekeepers who yeah. say, well, that's not horror. That's just a family drama.
It happens with cinema. You know, yeah. I don't really want to touch too much on it, but this is the whole discussion about the Martin Scorsese thing, and couple. I mean, really,
which I think is hilarious.
I think it's insane. It's how much it's spiraled out of control as to, like, people fighting about it. But that, I mean, that's the sort of thing that people are talking about. I understand what Scorsese is saying,
yeah.
But at the same time, it is gatekeeping. It is a way of saying what can and cannot be considered good entertainment.
Right. I mean, it's literally man who made movies that capitalized off of the blockbuster infrastructure that had been put in place during the New Hollywood movement, and he's raging against the very thing that gave him the platform to be able to say that in the first place and to create. Yeah. So it's like this hilarious Ouroboric cyclical thing that you can just keep going in on. And it's, I think that's why it's such a great fodder for the memes.
Yeah.
Send me the memes. I like them.
It was him and his cohorts, maybe not so much Scorsese himself, but him and his people that, you know, his contemporaries that literally set up blockbusters as we know it.
Yeah.
So it's not worth talking about. But any big plans to finish off the month?
I'm going to go see Robert Eggers' new film, something that I've been very much anticipating because The Witch was one of my favorite horror movies that I've ever seen. I'm also I'm a bit of a period junkie. I love...
big into that.
I really love the world that he created, and it feels like I'm watching a fantasy film almost. Yeah. Which, you know, there are fantastical elements to it, but
the
Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson,
who has emerged as one of his generation's preeminent actors. I'm blown away.
Ever since Good Time, you've been convinced. I remember when you watched it.
Yeah.
You came back and you're like, gotta see it.
Yeah. So let's hop into this a little bit. So this weekend I spent quite a bit of time at the movies playing catch up. I saw three films, saw The Lighthouse, I saw Zombieland 2, and I saw Jojo Rabbit.
Okay, let's go from the reverse order there.
You want to start with Jojo?
I want to end with The Lighthouse.
All right, let's start with Jojo Rabbit.
The Lighthouse at the end of the tunnel, as it were. Sorry.
Jojo Rabbit. Billed as the anti-hate satire in its marketing, which I think, first off, is a mistake. Don't put that out there. But I think they just kind of had to, because they were afraid that if they didn't make it obvious enough that people would misjudge this movie.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, it involves a young boy named Johannes Jojo growing up in the waning days of Nazi Germany. As the war is starting to turn against them, he's a young member of the Hitler Youth, and his imaginary friend is Adolf Hitler, played by Taika Waititi. Something to note: I don't know how much this makes a difference to people. It is worth noting that Taika Waititi was raised by has a Jewish mother, and
is also, I believe, of the Maori people.
He's half Jewish, half Maori. Yeah. So, to me, it seemed like he had some sort of, like, he wanted to make his mark on his own view of Nazi Germany. And I think there's a lot of people that were really upset from the start. It's, for some folks, joking about Nazi Germany, and he doesn't depict the Holocaust, but it involves, like, he has, there's kind of like an Anne Frank situation where a young girl is living in Jojo's house, protected by his mom, played by Scarlett Johansson.
The Holocaust is a looming threat.
Yeah, it's acknowledged that it is happening. It is, and Jojo is a part, is ostensibly a part of that infrastructure as being part of the Hitler Youth. So there's some people that really believe that you cannot make movies, that you cannot make comedies about this material. And to them, I would say, I hear you. If that is something that really sticks in your craw, do not see this movie. You know, I don't think that's you shouldn't have to change your mind if that's how you feel, because it is such a devastating topic. That said, I think it's important to explore a lot of things. I think it's important to explore a lot of things in cinema, and sometimes you have to do that from your own personal view. And I'm not saying that Taika Waititi thinks the Holocaust is funny or rife for comedic material. I think he uses humor to try and explain,
combat it.
Yeah, to combat it in a way, but more to explain the absurdity of the situation. and try to find some sort of semblance of humor in what was going on. I'll just dig into how I felt about it. I really like Jojo Rabbit. I think it was the best movie I saw this weekend. And Lighthouse fans will probably be upset with me for that.
Sorry about that, Lighthouse fans.
But Jojo Rabbit, I really thought was a really special film. I'd be a liar if I said that it's breaking new ground. Obviously, it's not going to change your
perception.
Perception. You should not like Nazi Germany was a bad thing. The Holocaust was a bad thing. There's no argument there. So right. Really, the question is, what's the satire?
Right.
I really think that folks are going into this movie expecting some sort of like expounding expose on Nazis and how it applies to today, and you know the kind of similarities that we're seeing.
Right. It's despite being set in the 40s, it feels relevant.
Yeah. It's incredibly relevant, but to me, I think that's not really what the movie's about. To me, the movie is about what happens when children get caught up in things that are so beyond their years and things that they don't understand.
Really?
Yeah. And it shows how children are so malleable and, you know, are...
can be made to be evil.
Yeah, people can be made to be evil. A child that is considered good can be made to be evil. It's just kind of, to me, about how we fail children in a number of ways and how the innocent are exploited for any number of reasons. Now, I think the big criticism that...
Hold on, can we talk about that for a second? Because I think that that's really interesting. Taika Waititi, with the movies that he has made, Boy, Hunt for the Wilder People, even Thor Ragnarok, I guess, is I think that he does a very good job of creating a type of movie. Boy being a familial drama, Hunt for the Wilder People, a buddy movie. But he surrounds it in these things that obscure the true heart of the film.
Yeah.
And I think that what it sounds like you're saying is, sure, the backdrop of this is Nazi Germany. Sure, yeah. The backdrop of this is something that's very topical to the things that we are seeing emerge from our own society. But mm-hmm. at the heart of it, there's a heart in every one of his films. And I think that's where the identity of the film comes from. And it's really interesting to hear that this is about how we as individuals and... as a society, can fail children.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about how it's I believe it was A.A. Dowd in the AV Club described this movie as toothless.
Yeah,
it does not really punish Nazis in any sort of meaningful way, which is it's not that kind of movie, I guess. There is a little bit of, I will cop to that, they have Sam Rockwell yet again playing the fascist with a heart of gold.
Really?
That he did in Three Billboards.
Yeah.
You know, and some people really enjoyed that performance and find it really interesting. Some people find it as a, you know, an apologist.
Right. Like they're reductive.
They're saying that it's, another complaint levied against Jojo Rabbit is that it's a Nazi apologist movie. I really think that is... If that's how you really feel,
I have not heard that. That seems extreme.
And I mean, when we say they, and we're talking about the milieu of takes that are on the internet, you know, who knows really who these people are that are saying this? But it's something that it's a complaint that I have seen levied against it. I think that is a misguided complaint because realistically speaking, you know, this is a story about how complicated people are, and I don't think if you want to see a movie where Nazis get punished, like go watch Inglourious Basterds. But then that has been considered in poor taste because of the way that it handles the material. Well, if you want to watch a serious Holocaust drama that doesn't pull punches,
Watch Schindler's List.
Go watch Schindler's List. Go watch there's a great movie called Son of Saul. Go watch The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. I think that those things are important and do need to exist, but that doesn't mean that a different look at how a world functions and how people can be good and have a hopeful, like, it's okay to have a hopeful outlook on bad times. You know, the movie ultimately has a hopeful outlook that, like, people can change and they can, like, hearts can change.
Right.
Like, you don't have to be a Nazi. You can be a good person.
I mean, that's how you kind of remain, you keep some of yourself intact.
Yeah.
After these terrible, distressing times. But, after just general distressing yeah. times.
But some people are really not big fans of Jojo Rabbit. They think it's, like, just lacks bite. It's,
I've heard self-congratulatory back patting.
Sure. If that's really how you feel about it, like, I don't know what kind of movie you want to see. I really don't. If it's not toothless enough, I don't, or it's too
toothless.
Too toothless, like it's lacking in any sort of satirical bite. Yeah, I don't know. There's other movies that have done it much more satirically, like The Producers, that gets brought up all the time.
Right.
And there's a school of thought that says even that movie is misguided and in poor taste because it makes fascism seem funny.
Right.
But the thing is that it kind of is. It depends on your sense of humor. If you don't find it funny, then you're not going to like this movie. If you do not think that the theatrics of fascism or, like, you know, a country, part of the movie is
the
that,
amount
like,
of the cognitive dissonance that it takes to actually adhere to a fascist
right. yeah,
agenda.
That's a huge joke in this movie, is that everybody's pretending everything is fine as, like, literally the Allies are closing in on this little German town that they live in. And they're just pretending, like, they're putting kids in, like, paper, literally paper Nazi uniforms and giving them guns. And it's like, that's where I think the satire is best, where it's like, oh my God, how silly is it to see this child with a rocket launcher and he accidentally fires it into a building. Right. But at the same time, it freaks you out because you're like, man, how close are we to this? How close, you know, and look what was done. Look at what we do to children, how they get exploited for whoever is in charge, and they're too innocent to know. They don't know.
Right.
Like, not to spoil the movie too much, you know, Jojo essentially finds out that both his parents are anti-Nazi party, and they hid it from him.
Right.
Because they knew it was safer for him to be part of the Hitler Youth and
right.
be a normal little boy
and
in
safe
Nazi
for the
Germany.
Family.
Yeah.
Because that's what they cared about.
Yeah.
They wanted to get them while they were young.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of opinions on it. Some people really just, they're just like, I can't, this can't be a movie. We can't do this.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the discourse around it, and yeah. I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah. But just give it a fair shake and just remind yourself to try and look past the window dressing of, yes, this is set in Nazi Germany. But really, what are they
trying
to
talk about? The film.
Yeah, what are they talking about? You know, why is this being set in Nazi Germany specifically? And really, also when you go past that, what are the characters experiencing? So
that's really engaging, Tom. I'm glad that you shared that.
Yeah. Next, I'll go to Zombieland 2, which is an exercise in why
futility.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I like the original Zombieland. I think it is a pretty fun movie. Obviously, it's got a lot of people that are really fun to watch. You've got Jesse Eisenberg. You've got Emma Stone, Woody Harrelson, Abigail Breslin.
Bill Murray.
Yeah, Bill Murray. Which they do address that.
No way.
That's so funny.
I guess of course they would.
Yeah. But. So I mean, that came out 10 years ago.
Yeah, 2009, right? Which itself was kind of at the tail end of the Apatovian, like, peak of comedy, right?
Yeah, and really, to me, at the end, we were getting close to the end of, like, peak zombie culture. Because let's remind ourselves that, like, zombies were kind of out of fashion for quite a while.
Right.
Like, obviously, like, you know, it was whatever. Like, zombie movies were around.
I Am Legend, you got Shaun of the Dead, right?
Well, I mean, I Am Legend isn't a zombie movie.
What?
They're vampires.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, so basically you get to the early 2000s and you get two things. You get the Dawn of the Dead remake by Zack Snyder and you get Shaun of the Dead. And it kind of makes these movies make zombies, like, cool again. Like, liking zombies becomes, like, a really in fashion thing to do. To do zombie themed stuff becomes really in fashion. And for the better part of that decade, like, zombies are super cool. People are wearing, like, it's like everything is zombie jokes.
You go to Hot Topic.
Yeah, it's you zombies. Go to Hot Topic, it's all zombie themed everything. Like, it was just the hot thing to do. There was an influx of zombie movies. I mean, really, you could even try to trace it back to like 28 Days Later,
right?
Which is, again, not technically a zombie movie. There, it doesn't matter. It's a zombie movie.
Yeah,
but
I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what? Fuck that. I Am Legend is a zombie movie. I mean, I know they're not.
So, yeah.
They just behave like more like zombies than what you imagine vampires. I'm sorry.
It uses the aesthetic and the ideas of zombie movies. It's just that technically they're vampires. They're
anyway,
infected. Whatever.
Anyway, but it's interesting to hear about the two parts of this movie. It's a comedy and it's a zombie movie. They're kind of Zombieland, the original in 2009, was kind of at the tail end of both.
Yeah,
the things that they were implying.
Yeah, the zombie like craze was really starting to wane a little bit. It was getting like, okay, we get it, zombies are fun, and like doing the postmodern take on zombies was like kind of like, okay, we did this
5 years ago with Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, it's not really super funny anymore, but I think it's a decent movie. I think Zombieland's a pretty decent movie, and it launched the career of the director. As far as that all is concerned.
Yeah, and I went back to watch it not that long ago, just threw something on, because I think it's on Netflix. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun movie. I mean, he got to direct Venom, like, because of that. You know, it was a movie that gave him a decent amount of leeway. He ended up directing the pretty terrible Gangster Squad.
Yeah, I remember that.
But anyway, so it was this movie that was kind of like almost too late for its own good, but still entertaining enough to be, and it was pretty clever. The writing was pretty good. I thought it was funny.
It was
whatever. So now we're 10 years later. And
the corpses are just even more desiccated.
Yeah. they definitely do some different stuff, but it's more or less, it's kind of just a rehash of the original while still being like pretty entertaining, honestly. If it were any other group of people playing these characters, it would probably be like 1.5 stars. I give it 3 out of 5. I think it's about on par.
You're going to give it a D.
Well,
not a C.
Yeah, I'm giving it like it's straight down the middle.
Yeah.
I think entertaining. They do some cool stuff, but like it also seems like they really slapped this together. Just like, hey man, you know, it's been 10 years since we did the last.
Do your schedules work out this time?
Yeah, can we make this just happen? I think a lot of the effects were not great. Like, you know, the original one had some pretty good kills and everything. This one less so. It has less of that fun. But it's a rousing cast of characters. They try to explore some of the... They try to, like, complicate the characters a little bit, or at least complicate their relationships. But it never goes quite far enough to be satisfying or anything. They do a lot of... You know, like, they introduce a new types of zombies. Like, these kind of super zombies that they call the T-800.
What is this, Left 4 Dead?
Basically, yeah. It's basically the video game.
It feels like a video game with the pop-up, you know, tutorials and stuff.
Yeah, with all the rules that pop up and everything like that. So, I mean, nothing... It's really nothing new.
How was... I'm curious about how was the... Because, you know, the trailer, you couldn't really avoid it. How were the bit where they bring in the people where it's like it's the Woody Harrelson proxy, you know what I mean?
It was pretty funny. Like, they do that. Yeah, they
was
do a
it?
Bit with Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch as being you know, the
as a riff on like how every zombie movie is kind of the same.
Yeah, and also just like the doppelganger thing is always a classic joke, but like also kind of tired.
A lot of
jokes in this movie are pretty tired.
It immediately reminded me of Shaun of the Dead, where they
do the exact same bit.
Yeah, and it's the people from Spaced and Martin Freeman and all the way back. Yeah, it's just the same people.
The doppelgangers. So it's the exact same gag, basically, but just with two of them.
The doppelgaggers.
Yeah. So one of the things that I found incredibly like... kind of like tacky about this movie is that it pretty much takes every opportunity possible to shit on like Gen Z people, Generation Z, so like the people that are younger than millennials,
right?
And I mean, it kind of gets into millennial stuff, but like they pretty much take every opportunity they can to make fun of how stupid young people are, and how like,
well, that's just a great way to get young kids to go see your movie.
Well, it's what breeds people who are just like, oh, I was born in the wrong generation, you know.
I wish I was born in the 40s.
Yeah. There's like this whole subplot about how Abigail Breslin's character, I mean, it's an interesting setup. She feels like trapped. She's a young woman. She feels confined. She's never really known anything other than the zombie apocalypse world. So she wants to go out and find people her own age because she's just been hanging out with like these full on adults.
Right.
Specifically Woody Harrelson, who treats her like a little girl, like a daughter.
Right.
And she feels confined. So it's an interesting setup, but really she winds up, you know, hanging out with, they make fun of like college hippies that go to Berkeley. Like, she hooks up with this dude who's from Berkeley, is a total hippie, passes off Bob Dylan songs as his own, like smokes a ton of weed and everything like that, and they
I've got some stuff you should read kind of guy.
Yeah it's totally stupid, and he's a pacifist,
right?
So basically the joke being that like, in a world where there's literally things out trying to kill and eat you, all these Gen Z kids are living in like a hippie commune, so ignorant of like anything. They melt down everybody's weapons, and when this horde of like super zombies shows up, they have no weapons to fight with, and it's up to the people who know the reality of the world,
right, that you to have protect to them. You have to use violence in order to combat violence.
And I don't know, it fits within the confines of the story and the world that they've built for themselves. And it is kind of funny. It's like, yeah, you're living in a totally ignorant bubble where it's like, dude, there's literally zombies out here. Why would you be a pacifist?
Right.
That sort of thing. So, and also the introduction, Zoe Deutsch plays like this total ditz. That's kind of interesting. Like, she's actually really funny, but it's like definitely comes off as a lazy character. Where it's just like, yeah, isn't it funny how girly she is, and she's so stupid. That's all she is. She's just like really stupid.
It sounds very slapped together. Every aspect of this sounds slapped together. But
I will say I found it pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, the performances are all there. Emma Stone is kind of losing me as a girl with a chip on her shoulder. Like, it's not really that funny anymore to me, or it's super entertaining. But it's consistent. Abigail Breslin's a surprisingly bad actor.
Really?
Yeah. She's an Oscar winner, and she's a surprisingly bad actor.
Wow. What is it about it that makes you think that it's bad acting?
I don't know. She just, a lot of the line deliveries.
Is she tired, or just
a lot of the line deliveries are super flat. Like, you know, it's just not super, she's not fun to watch. She's kind of doesn't like seem to like being there at all. Which is weird, because in the original Zombieland, she was a delight. So who knows?
Maybe she's going to pull like an Ed Norton and just get involved in cryptocurrency or some stupid shit.
Maybe. Yeah. But I will say it is pretty shocking that they managed to get all these people 10 years later to be in a movie after two of them have won. Abigail Breslin had already won an Oscar when she was in the first one. But get all these people together, two of whom are Oscar nominees and two of whom are Oscar winners, to be in kind of a silly zombie movie. So it's not bad. I think it's fine.
But it's forgettable, it sounds like.
Yeah. But if you like the material and if you like the characters, you think they're funny, like, you'll probably enjoy yourself. It's not a bad way to spend an afternoon, honestly, if we're being completely honest with ourselves. But it does give an interesting look into, like, this is what, you know, do all movies deserve sequels? I didn't really need a sequel to Zombieland.
Is yes. I know where you're going with this, Tom.
So, I mean, the original Zombieland is fun enough. I own it. I watch it from time to time. I think it's an entertaining watch.
It's a movie that I watch with my aunt a lot.
Really?
We sit down and we watch Zombieland and we throw marshmallows at each other.
Really?
That's a thing. That is a real thing.
Oh, my gosh.
And Aunt Carol. Shout out.
Shout out, Carol. All right. So, The Lighthouse.
We finally reached it.
Yeah. Robert Eggers.
Long-awaited follow-up to The Witch. Or The Vitch.
Okay, I got to say this right now. This goes for The Witch, and this goes for Midsommar. If you pronounce Midsommar Midsommar, stop it. Just say Midsommar. You're not clever. It's just stylized. Like, yes, that's how it is written.
That's how it'd be written.
But just call it
Midsommar.
Are
you Swedish? Yeah. Are you Swedish?
It literally means, you know what Midsommar means? Midsummer. Just say Midsummer.
Whoa, it's a cognate?
Yeah. well, just say Midsommar. And then when it comes to if you say the Vivitch,
yeah, Tom, if you're not pronouncing the space in between the W, then you just haven't fucking
it's
lived.
Just so stupid because it's just stylized that way because it's a period piece,
right?
And that's how they would have written witch, was with two V's, you know, but it's pronounced witch. Just say the witch. You're not like some, you're not in on it, you know.
I'm feeling attacked right now.
You should feel attacked.
I feel only, because I pronounce it the witch. I say the witch, guys.
Yeah, come but on. There are people out there who are like, oh, yeah, the Vavitch. Even if you say it jokingly, like, oh, yeah, what's that, the Vavitch?
If just you say the Vavitch, I'm going to log into your Reddit account and downvote all of the funniest things. So your algorithm is going to be fucked.
Memes. All your saved fucking memes. So the lighthouse, pretty simple setup. Two dudes... stuck
two dudes, it. One phallus. What happens?
Two dudes, one lighthouse. Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable film shot in. I'm not really sure what the aspect ratio is. I'm not very keyed in on that, but it's shot at like a square.
Sure.
Kind of like
a silent movie.
Yeah, kind of like that
vibe.
Very old school. Robert Eggers is leaning hard into the period piece thing. Much like The Witch, if you are not paying attention to the dialogue, and like, you really have to be paying attention to what they're saying, because one, they're using incredibly archaic language to our ears. Like, obviously it's not English. You can understand what they're saying, but the syntax, the terminology is all completely like very, very old.
Going I read back an to interview internet. With Robert Eggers where he said that he reads like mid century old English literature, you know, like old with the E at the end, English literature for fun.
Yeah, so this is like,
that's his bread and butter.
Yeah, I'm guessing this movie takes place somewhere around maybe the turn of the century, if not a little bit older, in a time when lighthouse keeping was like an essential job, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's Willem Dafoe, it's Robert Pattinson on an island and keeping a lighthouse, and things just get totally weird.
And it's just the setup right there is such an interesting, such an arresting concept, because there are so many things that you can play with immediately, right? The idea of being a lighthouse keeper is so distinctly, it feels so distinctly American almost. You know, you got that, like, I just imagine like an old lighthouse on the eastern seaboard, you know?
I mean, it's very much that, yeah. And he captures it beautifully.
And it also, you know, starts, there's something mythical about it because it is of such an older period compared to where we are now. Mm-hmm. But you have things like mermaids and the old, all of the mythology that surrounds being a person of the sea.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so, and that's very important.
And that immediately just comes to my mind when I heard about the idea of the lighthouse. It's like, okay, it's going to be claustrophobic. It's going to be mythological, straight up mystic.
Yeah, it's a movie that is very, very distinct in what it's going for and how it presents itself. And it's definitely not for everybody. It's really not for everybody. I mean, this is going to be a movie that, you know, generally speaking, cinephiles will praise because it is impeccably shot. It is is somewhat obscure as to what this movie is, what is going on in this movie. It's really a rich text to kind of dig into and try to figure out like what is happening and what's going on. But really the whole thing is that the central performances are so anchored and so well thought out. Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson depict madness in a way that really makes people uncomfortable. I'm really interested to hear people, if they got the chance to see it this weekend, what the reaction of the audience was like. Because when I saw it at the Music Box, there were people like, I mean, there are laughs throughout it. There's like some silly things. Like there's literally fart jokes. There's like fart and poop jokes.
Of course. Because they're heavy drinkers.
Yeah. Yeah. And Willem Dafoe is like this old sea dog, you know, sort of guy, and he just doesn't care and all that kind of shit. But there were many points, even when things started getting, to me, really horrifying and really like
uncomfortable,
people were like straight up like cackling with laughter. And I don't know if that was because they were enjoying the madness or they were thinking, oh my god, this is so weird, like how crazy. Sure. Or they just thought it was stupid, who knows. So I'm very curious to see what people's reactions are to this movie. All I know is that this is probably going to wind up in like best pictures of the year because it's just pretty remarkable.
But it won't win.
Oh yeah, it's not going to get nominated for best picture or anything, but I think when people talk about the best movies of the year, Lighthouse is going to be in the conversation, especially for performances like Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson just go off. I think Pattinson has some trouble with like accent early on. He kind of can't like set on what kind of accent he's going to do.
Interesting.
It's difficult because you know people at that time accents were entirely different. There was still a lot of British influence on, especially if we're talking the Upper Eastern Seaboard. Like people in Maine, like probably had a little bit of like British influence on their accent.
Where Irish, let's be honest, Irish that's influence. Probably where the Lighthouse was, right?
Yeah, they don't specifically say, or at least I can't remember them specifically saying where it is, but it's to be implied that we're talking like coast of Maine or something like that, you know. It's really one of those difficult things. Depicting madness on film is very difficult to get right because it either teeters into
schlock.
Or like comedy,
right?
And you don't take it seriously. I think this was kind of a great blend of both in terms of the performances. If you can see it at the Music Box, because the presentation is beautiful, they do it's a really cool thing to be watching this like classical movie. You know, this movie shown in the Music Box,
yeah.
In that environment, I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. I feel like it's a movie that everybody just needs to see and just make up your mind about it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It immediately strikes me. I can already tell. I mean, I have not seen it yet, but it immediately strikes me as something that I am going to love. And I'm just very excited to see it in general. But like my mom would think it's insufferable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She'd be like, what is this like art shit?
Yeah. You know? Fuck off, Connor. Let's watch Notting Hill again.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I watched this weekend. And then next, I've not gotten to see Parasite yet, which I really want to see Parasite. And then I can't believe I'm saying this. I got to see Terminator next weekend. Terminator,
no
Dark
way.
Fate. Talking about franchises that just are
talking
like
about
running
why.
Themselves into the ground and yet still keep getting up.
It's fucked up how like Terminator Salvation was the best sequel like that they've done in the last 10 years.
Probably, yeah.
And
honestly,
that movie is pretty maligned, I'd say.
Yeah, I really don't think it's that bad. I think it's all right. It's some missteps.
Yeah, I like it.
I think it's a decent enough Terminator sequel. But yeah, man, like you like.
Speaking of bad actors, can Emilia Clarke act?
No. The answer is no. at least in anything other than Game of Thrones, apparently. Like, she's just really bad in pretty much everything except for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And some people don't even like her in Game of Thrones. I think she's a bad actor.
I think the performances are kind of flat. But anyway, the cool thing about Dark Fate is they brought back the original Sarah Connor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which has not happened since, what, 3?
Linda Hamilton is only in Terminator 1 and 2.
So is this sort of a retcon like they did with Halloween? Is this like a direct sequel?
Exactly what it is. You hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what this is.
Oh,
this is a direct sequel to Terminator 2.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Well, that's actually... Okay.
Well, okay. I mean, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem because like... I feel like the Terminator movies have just kind of lost sight of what is actually good about them, and they're totally like pushing that Arnold Schwarzenegger is back, although like he wasn't just in the last one.
Yeah, he's in like every single fucking one.
Yeah, I think the only one he's not in is he's not physically in Terminator Salvation.
Yeah, he is. He gets copied.
He gets copied, but that's not physically him.
Oh,
it's not him.
No, it's
he CGI. Is not in it. His like, likeness is in it.
Right, but. It's him. Come on. Like, it's.
If we're talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, he did not act in that
movie.
No,
but his presence, like his.
Well, yeah.
The fact that he. His visage appears in it, you know. There is no Terminator without that.
Without
the face
the
of
likeness
the governor
of
from California.
But he is. Like, they're acting like he was not in Terminator Genesis. I think they'd really rather prefer that movie just gets forgotten completely. But it's also a reuniting between Arnold and Linda Hamilton. James Cameron is back as like
producer?
Executive producer or producer or something. Apparently the story is by him, but like he's not nearly involved enough to like actually make this. I don't know how involved he is. If he's involved enough to actually make this a good movie, but we'll just have to see.
I doubt it. I'll bet he's too interested in the 4,000 Avatar sequels that he's doing.
I don't know. His career has gone just a weird place.
Yeah.
Just a weird place. He basically just doesn't give a shit anymore about
making...
What's the last movie he made? The last movie he made was Avatar.
Yeah, 12 years ago.
It's just nuts.
It's like Tool.
Oh, my God.
Start off strong and then just disappoint everybody for 20 years on.
Oof.
Oof. Yeah, that's all rough. Right.
So let's close up that bag. Thank you, Connor, for sharing your horrible nightmare dreamscape.
Yeah, you're welcome.